Next case for argument, Wilbert versus Commissioner of Internal Revenue, Mr. Wilbert.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court that I'm David Allen Wilbert. I'm the pro se appellant representing myself in this case. This morning I'd like to bring up a few what I consider major discrepancies in this case, and the first one being the fact that taxpayer rights were violated, my taxpayer rights, and specifically under the IRS Restructuring Reform Act of 1998, Section 3001, which later became IRC 7491 under the Internal Revenue Code. And basically, IRC 7491A1 says that when credible evidence is introduced, that the burden of shifts to the IRS, the burden of proof, rather. And I maintain that the shift did, in fact, shift to the IRS.
Let me just ask you this. Did at any point, did you challenge the tax court's finding that once you were bumped from your mechanic position in Minneapolis under the seniority rights arrangement, that it was not foreseeable that you would be able to return to Minneapolis at any time?
Yes. In fact, I had let the Judge Krupa know during the trial that there was actually a letter from the union that I point out in my briefs, the substantiation that the union felt that because of my seniority being well under the announced number of layoffs, that it would be of limited duration, these short jobs that in hindsight shows that some lasted only a few days, the first three no more than a few weeks. Exactly as I expected and exactly as my union portrayed in that respect. But more importantly, I think, is the after I had exhausted those few short positions, you get to the fact that I had totally exhausted, was done with the company, and I had no other bumping rights. Now I was in layoff. But because of my real estate, I had a business, so I started working that full time. I was already working it, but that became my primary. Well, what's happened next is I get a phone call on, I'm collecting unemployment, but because of underemployment qualification, because I had no money in those weeks. And then I get a call offering a contractually classified temporary position. And per contract, that had to last 9 months or less. It was basically a summer position for Anchorage, and I accepted that. That position is why I argue that it was temporary, is because it meets the less than 1 year rule under, you know, the enhanced IRS stipulations that it be under 1 year. And it also, at that point, I knew I was coming back to Hudson, Wisconsin, which is in the Twin Cities area, at the end of that summer temp. And I also knew that it had to be within 9 months' time, that it would end at the end of the summer. And it exactly did end. And I returned to Hudson, Wisconsin, and again, worked real estate and collected unemployment for the weeks that I was underemployed.
But your brief indicates your address is in Illinois now. So have you moved to Illinois? Or?
Yes, I have. In the beginning of 2007, I notified the tax court at that time as I did move to Illinois.
So eventually you were terminated by Northwest? You ran out of bumping possibilities?
Well, at several locations. First in 2003 in May, I was totally done. The fact that I got a recall to a temporary position, which meant I went back to layoff without unemployment, that happened again in the fall of 2003. Then in the last week of 2003, I was offered a full-time permanent in the last week of 2003, and that lasted till 2005 when I was totally done and never worked with Northwest again.
Do you have any prospects for Northwest, or is that?
No, that's over. I actually moved on with a
what, are you in real estate now, or what are you doing in Illinois?
Both. Actually, my real estate, when I moved to Illinois, I am registered in the DuPage County as Secret to Save Realty there. So I am in real estate, but my full-time job continues to be in aviation with Federal Express.
With, I'm sorry?
Federal Express.
Oh, you're working for Federal Express in DuPage or in O'Hare?
Airport, yep.
You're working at O'Hare, okay.
So that's what brought me out. That job opportunity is what brought me out here. But getting back on point, you know, the appellee cites the General Auto Service Station versus City of Chicago in this circuit in response to the Restructuring Reform Act that I say is violated. You know, they claim that the tax court ordered briefs were post-trial motions in that one, and they were not. They were ordered during the trial to make our case, and they were actually part of the trial. What they're not realizing, I don't believe the IRS or the tax court, is that the act was fully applicable at the point that I gave credible evidence to the IRS. And a couple examples of that I'd like to give is in the stipulations of facts, document 14, exhibit 10J, was my lodging receipts. They were in chronological order showing the leasing company, you know, all my expenses, who it was rented to, the amount, the apartment unit. That was document 14, exhibit 10J. And those were not allowed. I mean, every step of the way, the IRS was not allowing it.
But I don't think the problem is with the facts, right? Isn't it the IRS's position is that you weren't, working in Minneapolis in effect.
Well, you're correct. It's very convoluted because it's several points: the temporary issue, which is would determine allowability. Then there's the away-from-home issue. But lastly, there's a substantiation issue. My point is on the substantiation issue, Treasury Regulation 1.274-5 said that documentary evidence is considered adequate to support if it establishes the amount, date, place, and character of expense. These lodging receipts are an example of that. Yet nowhere in the record does the IRS say, well, we'll accept your receipts, except you got to prove temporary. They keep it convoluted and say, you weren't temporary, you weren't away from home, and you didn't substantiate. So that's the brick wall that I've ran into.
How much income was earned in 2003 in the real estate job, even if it wasn't paid, until 2004?
It was nearly $2,000. It was a split commission, and the reason why it was less than that is because that actual house listing contract that I got was while I was in Alaska on my temporary position. I took that phone call from past advertising, and my broker agreed to do a 50-50 split. And I helped out with it when I was back home on my days off, and that's why it was the last commission on that. But it got paid in early 2004. And there were other items, you know, on the temporary, we got to hit on the temporary issue because that summer position was exclusive by itself, independent, lasted less than 9 months. And then to go with that is the away from home, and that's where the real estate ties in. I don't believe the IRS has given any case, or that any exists, where a taxpayer actually met the less than 1 year, actually had business ties to the area, and substantiated. I don't find any cases. All their cases rely on either a taxpayer wasn't temporary, they were more than a year, or they had no business ties. So I think this case is important because it's going to be able to show that there is a special to mitigate that burden to the taxpayer. There is a special exemption, and I believe I meet those under the law.
And can you save the rest of your time for rebuttal, Mr. Wilcox?
Yeah, just one last thing I'll hit before rebuttal is there again on the fairness of the IRS, the contributions. That was also shown in document 14-4J. They use a case of where the taxpayer didn't itemize. But in my case, I had itemized list and the organization. It was a tax-exempt organization. I itemized on my taxes, and I provided that in document 14-4-J. And they didn't allow that as well. So that's something else I'm looking for. Okay, I'll rest for rebuttal.
Mr. Wilder, thank you. So, Mr. Clark?
May it please the Court, Thomas Clark on behalf of the Commissioner. This issue of the traveling expenses potentially involves a three-step analysis. However, if the Court agrees with the Commissioner and with the Tax Court on the first step, you don't have to go any further than that. And the first step of the analysis is what was Mr. Wilbert's home for purposes of Section 162A1 of the Internal Revenue Code once he was laid off from his job as a Northwest mechanic in Minneapolis in early April of 2003.
Well, what evidence established that he had no feasible chance to return to employment in Minneapolis?
There was no evidence that he did have a chance, but I don't know that that's part of the test. The test for this away from home deduction is where is your principal place of work? And once he was laid off from Minneapolis in early April 2003, I mean, that was no longer his principal place of business.
If a person has two jobs, as Mr. Wilbert arguably did here, can either one be used to establish his regular workplace vicinity?
No, Your Honor. There is law out there that recognizes that a taxpayer can have two places of work, and when that happens, the court is to determine which one of those is the principal place of work, and this deduction is available for travel away on a temporary job from that principal place of work. So, when there are two places of work, then the question is, what is the principal place of work? Now, with respect to the real estate activity, we really have two responses to that argument. The first is the same as the one given by the tax court. There's a footnote in the tax court's opinion as to why the real estate business could not have been Mr. Wilbert's principal place of business, and that is that once he was laid off in early April of 2003, he did not pursue that business for the rest of the year, as one might have assumed he would have if it was his principal business. But instead, he went across the country to Chicago, Anchorage, Flushing, New York, for these other jobs. And so the tax court determined on that basis and found as a fact that his principal business was as an airline mechanic.
Now, tell me, how would you propose that we distinguish work that is temporary from work that is indefinite in nature? When Mr. Wilbert accepted the various positions, in each case, wasn't it foreseeable that those positions would end within a short period of time due to the seniority bumping rights of others?
Well, that assumes, though, that there is a more senior person who will bump him from Chicago or from Anchorage. And I think that under this court's decision in Kaysen, we would rely heavily on that the court is not to make those assumptions. In Kaysen, there was a union worker who lost his job in southern Wisconsin, went to a neighboring union jurisdiction in northern Illinois, and under his local union rules, he was required to return to Wisconsin if and when a job opened up, which could have been a day, it could have been a week, it could have been a year. As it turned out in that case, it was more than a year, but the court went through the analysis as to how when he went to northern Illinois for the job, there was just no way of telling for certain when he would be able to come back to Wisconsin. And I think the same principle applies here.
I find this case to be so fundamentally unfair. I think what happened, to Mr. Wilbert is
the tax court expressed sympathy for his position,
and then ruled against him.
Because it applied the law, we think, correctly. In Kaysen, I would emphasize that this court specifically rejected a reasonableness test for this deduction.
Is this the first bumping case?
Your Honor, there have been a number of these cases with the Northwest Mechanics in the tax court.
But the bumping is extremely common in unionized business, not just an airline thing.
Well, yeah. I don't know of any other cases, Your Honor. There are other Northwest cases, certainly, in the tax courts. I'm not familiar with other
just tax court
cases.
In the nature of the airline, you have so many locations you could go to, I guess.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, but the evidence indicates that the positions were foreseeably of a limited duration and thus temporary, such that it wouldn't be reasonable to expect him to move to a distant location. Employment, which merely lacks permanence, is indefinite unless termination is foreseeable within a short period of time. But here the evidence is that you know, was the termination within a short period of time was foreseeable. I just, you know.
Your Honor, the best answer I can give to that is that Mr. Wilbert's position here and you know, the indefiniteness or temporariness of his jobs in Chicago and Anchorage and Flushing were no more or no less indefinite than a taxpayer's job in Kaysen. So I think that this follows directly from the court's decision.
What if you had a trial lawyer for a big firm and he has a national practice? And, you know, 6 months of the year he's traveling and spends maybe 3 months in some little town litigating a case. How's that case treated?
Your Honor, I believe that is the quintessential type of case where an away-from-home deduction would be allowed because he has his principal place of business wherever his office and his law firm is located. And if his work...
It's not the length of the absence from the office, but whether he has an office that's some sort of center of some kind of nerve center of his profession, his activity.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Did Mr. Wilbert have no expectation of returning to Minneapolis for Northwest? Northwest would bring him back.
I mean, the record is kind of thin. I mean, if there's anything in it as to what the prospects were as to his coming back to Minneapolis to work for Northwest.
Well, what if Northwest has said to him, look, you know, we have to lay you off, and you know, you're going to have to bump around the world for the next year or so. But you know, we're reasonably confident that by the end of that time, we will have airline industry will have. Will have recovered, and you'll be able to come back to Minneapolis. Would that alter the case?
Your Honor, that's closer, but that still sounds kind of indefinite. My gut reaction is that still sounds like it's kind of indefinite when they're predicting that far out.
Kind of strange, though. I mean, what would he do? Sell his house?
Yeah.
Become a kind of...
Gypsy.
Wanderer.
These are exactly the types of questions that the courts have dealt with before and rejected. It's not a reasonableness test. I mean, would I have sold my house and moved to Anchorage if I was in Mr. Wilbert's position? Almost assuredly not. But see, that's not what the test is for the tax deduction. Because
it's bad law.
The court in Kaysen said that it rejected the reasonableness test, said it because the reasonable test improperly focuses attention on the taxpayer's particular living condition. It is the job, not the taxpayer's style of life, that is of critical importance.
You know, could we go back to Judge Posner's thought about the trial lawyer? The trial lawyer's office is, you know, let's say it was in Minneapolis. Isn't that where Northwest is? And isn't that from which all of everything emanated? In other words, that's where they would have sent out the notices. Look, we have a position in Chicago. We have a position in Anchorage. So, what would be the difference between the trial lawyer?
Because the facts of this case is that he was laid off from his job in Minneapolis. That was it. He no longer had a job in Minneapolis, and that distinguishes the case from the lawyer in a law firm.
But
what if you had someone who was just a I had a former law clerk of mine that had for a period a very lucrative lecture business. He traveled around giving talks, but I don't think he had an office. He just
Then you're getting into the traveling salesman type of situation, and the IRS has revenue rulings on that.
Yes, what does it say about traveling salesmen?
Well, they first look at whether or not there is a principal place of business. And if there is a principal place of business,
There isn't.
If there is none, then you're an itinerant. And if you're an itinerant, you have no home to be away from. Those are rulings of the IRS.
Someone who's a, say he's an independent contractor salesman, he's not a, he doesn't work for a company, he sells on a commission basis and he travels all around. He can't deduct his expenses?
He has no, not under 162A2 because he has no home from which he is away from.
This would be duty station. His official duty station was originally in Minneapolis. Then it became Anchorage. Then it became Flushing. Then it became...
Yes, Your Honor.
So that's transportation. You can't charge it.
Right.
But a traveling salesman would, or the lecturer would be able to deduct his travel expenses as business expenses, right?
They might be deductible as business expenses. But again, I haven't read all the rulings on the traveling salesman type of situation because I didn't think
that. You're saying he can't deduct his regular business expenses because it's not as if he were traveling around servicing airplanes in different airports, right?
Right. He had an indefinite job in Flushing and like Casey, he had no idea how long it would last.
It's not a traveling job. It's not a moving job.
Governor, my time is up. Mm. May I make one further point about the real estate business? I wanted to make sure you're clear on this because there is no documentary evidence in the record that Mr. Wilbert engaged in the real estate business in 2003. None. The record includes, it shows that he has real estate licenses, shows that he had an independent contractor agreement with a broker, but it doesn't show he engaged in the business. Yeah, I have a driver's license, which is proof that I have the state authorizing me to drive. It's not proof that I ever drove a car. The only evidence in the record that Mr. Wilbert engaged in the real estate business in 2003 is a single declarative statement at the trial in which he said, I had real estate transactions, but the closing, when you actually get paid, they reported it in 2004. Now, I don't know that the tax court was required to accept that as proof that he engaged in the real estate business in 2003, but even if it was, it's certainly not enough to show it was his principal place of business.
Well, that's, I thought, what was your main argument, that he would be earning much more from his airline job.
Yeah, and on the point of the charitable contributions, I would refer the court to pages 12 to 15 of the transcript where Judge Krupa went out of her way to find out what issues remained for trial. And this issue was not mentioned. It was not an issue at trial. It was given up before trial.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Clark. So, Mr. Wilbert, you have how much time does he have? You have 1 minute. 1 minute.
Not much time, but quickly, I'll just work backwards there. On the contributions, I put in my final brief, we did have an agreement, and that's in there. That's why the IRS also said they're not in dispute, but you will find on the petition for court, contributions is at issue. That's why it wasn't no longer addressed by either party. It was an agreement that got disallowed in error. I had not conceded that issue. Going back to the real estate that he talks about in 2003, substantial here is the fact that the IRS allowed all of my business deductions. I wasn't going to spend an extra day in trial trying to bring in and all kinds of... I thought what I had was sufficient, and when they allowed the business deductions, and Judge Krupa had found that they had and they acknowledged that we arrived at numbers for the entire year 2003, I felt that that was a done issue, that we were okay on that. But then I was shocked when Judge Krupa made an assumption, which I feel is unreasonable, and said that she assumed I would have worked real estate full time. The problem there is I was new in real estate. I didn't have a current contract at that time, and when the decision came to take this temporary in Anchorage, it was a decision for health and benefits, which real estate didn't allow, and a guaranteed weekly income. I believe there are certain facts of each case where a reasonable standard should be used, and it should be used in this case.
Okay.
And, well, am I done?
Your time.
Okay. Thanks for your time, Your Honor.
Thank you to both counsel. Well, I'm sorry, you're not a lawyer, but you did fine.